Accession number 13042, row 2.
Sokolevsky Realtor.
Yes. Anyway, my friend was Willy Brolinski.
He was the special friend you took it up with.
No, you see, all the time we share, because whatever we had, I share with him. You see, first I had in the same camp was my friends from Poland, from school, brother. He was older than I am, so I tried to help him whatever I could, you know, because I was going out to work. They wouldn't take him because he was a lieutenant, so they wouldn't take him. And I helped him. But later I was just staying with this, with Brolinski. Now, I only last year read that he was executed in Katyn. And as a matter, they all were executed, except later on in the same regiment in Italy was Hoff. He was killed at Loreto action. And, Kmiecik, he was in the, we were in the same regiment later. And there is another, Mieczysław Krąb. He is living in Gdańsk, if he is alive yet.
And where did you find all this out?
No, because you see, during the, I mean, during later on during the war, because Kmiecik, when we were released, that's the further action. When we were released, we were in the same regiment. You see, the same Krump, we were in the same regiment, and Hoff, we were in the same regiment, four of us.
So you were saying that they made you sit down with your legs apart.
Oh, yes.
That's where you had got up to.
Down there. And later on, after three and a half hour, they sent us back to the same place we came from, in the same huts. And down there, I was in that camp till about late March 1940, late March. They collected, I don't know how, but they collected a small group and they took us from that camp and sent us to the Polish territory, which was before the war, Rovno.
Before you leave that camp, you were there for about 4 months then.
Yes.
Are there any other things that happened to you there that you can recount?
You see, point is that they were food, whatever they give us. Now, they call it the officer's ration. It was 200 gram white bread. That's the privilege, and 300 grams of heavy black bread. That was daily ration. Besides that, they were giving one plate of fish. They call it tulka. It's about 2 inches long, so salty. So that was one plate for 10. And no water. No water whatsoever. You see, the queue for water, there was changing during the night, just waiting in the queue so tap water may come, and nothing coming. For 3 days, they didn't give water at all, and that's salty fish. Now, there wasn't much of that fish, but if you're eating salty, so you are thirsty. You see, and water to the kitchen was bringing some farmer or whoever. But anyway, on the sledges he was bringing water. So you see, to get a bit of water, what we did? The best pair of boots you're trying to sell to that chappy and to take his attention out of the water, and somebody is going and pinch, you know, a few pints of water. So you see, that's for the younger people, we could survive. For older people, it was practically impossible.
What happened to them?
No, you see, some of them, they, especially there was quite a lot of old doctors, they were dying. But you see, oh, something what I have forgotten, when war broke up between Soviet Russia and Finland, they were bringing to Kozelsk quite a lot of casualties, especially the frostbite from Finland from down there. And at that time, they took some of our doctors to look after their wounded.
The wounded in Kozelsk?
Wounded on the Finnish front. To look after them because they had no doctors.
So they were taken away from Kozelsk?
They were just, it was in Kozelsk, but they were taken from the camp and then during the night bring back to the camp. But they needed their services, so they took them to the hospital. I don't know, it must be some provisional hospital down there, schools or something like that. They adapted.
But you said that in this monastery camp, you had people dying all the time?
You see, they were getting ill. They were getting sick, so they went. You see, there was no sick bay in that camp. I was actually in that skit. You see, they were taking to to the monastery camp. But they never came back because they were older people. There's quite a lot of old people.
But the cat in mat, did this occur during this winter of 39-40?
No, that's in the spring. You see, that's what I say. I was taken from that camp with some others. There were two doctors. There was one even down here, Dr. Krushinsky. He was at lecturing at the university, Liverpool University. And there was Dr. Danik. I don't know what happened to them later on. And we were taken from that camp in the small group. It was just about 80 of us. If it was about 80, we were taken from that camp. And what happened later on in the Kozelsk camp, I had no idea until during the war, when we were discovered that all those people were executed. Now, I never had any doubt that a Russian or the Soviet, they massacred those people. Now, you mentioned before what we were digging. I presume we were digging graves for ourselves. But they changed plan, and they took them to Katyn, and they executed them over there. But, as I say, it was after I left.
Was it possible for you to say to the Soviet authorities, look, why are you holding us here? What are we supposed to be doing? Did you ever try to speak to them in those terms?
You see, if I spoke that way, I wouldn't be here. You couldn't. You see, whatever I think, I survive because I volunteer when I was down there. I volunteer to go to work. I didn't work for the Soviet Russia. I was working for myself because I always believe if there is only 25 men, you can find something. You don't imagine that being in prison in such huge amount of people, you couldn't find anything. You see, but if you are prisoner, if you find piece of wire, if you find even fish bone, you could make needle out of that. Because you got time, and you could do something with that.
So you wanted to be in a small group?
I always wanted to be in the smaller group, because in the smaller group you could always find something. You could survive better than in the big... So, you see, I always volunteer when they were asking for volunteers to go to work. I volunteer, and I think that's on the end decided my fate.
But you say if you had raised the question of what they were doing with you, you would have drawn attention to yourself.
Oh, yes, you would be counter-revolutionary immediately. You see, that's what happens. Some people, they... They didn't realize that you're not talking with the authority, you're talking with the, people hungry of your blood. So give them any reason you had it.
Did that actually happen to people from your personal knowledge?
Oh, you see, all those my friends. You see, there was one. I couldn't understand why. You see, there was Joseph, Sagan. He was working all the time. He was sewing wood for the kitchen, you know, and he was executed. Really, I just don't realize why they executed him. He was such... poor man and quiet and everything. He never said a single word. And they took him just the same.
Which camp was that?
No, that's from that camp, from Kozielsk. Oh, you see, another thing, there was one woman with us. She was Flight Lieutenant Lewandowska. Now, she was the only woman in the camp. And they didn't leave her. She was massacred as well, with all others.
So you said that you went with 80 other people.
Yes, just about. I don't. I wouldn't say 80 or 70,
approximately. And this was in March 1940.
March 1940. Yes.
Where did you go to?
You see, they took us to Rovno.
To another camp?
To another camp, yes. You see, naturally the doctors, they went into practice in camps. Mainly those who came with me, they were so-called, they were physically not so strong. So they didn't send us to work or anything, but they didn't feed us. You know, they just given us 400 grams of bread and soup. And as I say, I didn't go to Russia to earn money. So I didn't work, and they didn't feed me.
What kind of bread and what kind of soup?
That heavy, and soup or any, you know, is the cabbage, you know, just sprinkle on the water and that's it. That's the soup. But if you don't work, you don't need much food. But I was lucky. There was, in that camp, was a civilian doctor. Now, he was a Jew, Cohen. And somehow he was coming, and he bring me every day a couple eggs.
Just to you?
Just to me. You see. And That helped me quite a lot.
Why did he do it just for you?
You see, point is that he was from Western Poland. He escaped when Germany advancing. And he had a son, more or less, my age. And I think he had some sympathy towards me because, you see, his son was left on the other side, so he didn't know what happened to his son. And he could, you know, he was civilian.
Where did he get the eggs from?
Oh, he was, you know, because it was on the Polish territory. Pre-war, it was Polish territory. And you see, if he probably had some civilian people coming to him for some help, you know, they had no money to pay, so they bring him, you know, farmers, they brought him something. So he shared that with me, and that helped me quite a lot.
Any other things that happened to you at Rovno?
No, you see, I was sent later on to a different camp, the smaller camp. And they started, they were building a road to join Przemysl, if you know what is that.
Yes.
Przemysl, Lwów, Rovno, Kiev. That was the motorway, more or less, or something better class road. They were preparing for, definitely for war. You see, because, I have forgotten to mention that just as well as in Kozielsk and later on in every camp, there was the political commissar. There was the commander of the camp, and there was political commissar. Now, political commissar, wherever possible, in the evening or when people didn't go to work, he did his duty. He tried to convert people into their way of thinking. And they always, I remember that Politruk always said that the policy of the Soviet Russia is helping Germany to fight with the West, with Great Britain. And then when they both will be weak, we just march without shooting. That was the idea behind all the time. So you see, you could see down there on the railways the cisterns, they were going with oil to Germany without stop. All the time they were sending. And later, that is 1941 already, when that motorway was built, they started to build the airfields, a lot of them. And those airfields, the camp, we were moved to one place where they wanted to build the airfield. It was near Krasne. It is, I don't know if you are familiar with the geography.
Yes.
It wasn't far from Zlochov, Zdolbunov.
I don't know where that is.
No, it's between Lvov and Tarnopol,
yes.
If you know. Now, there is Zlochov, Zdolbunov, Krasne. It was the very important the railway place. The junction, yes, very important down there. And in that place, they actually started to build the airfield. And
what were you expected to do?
You see, I was, for some time, as I was not physically strong to do heavy work. They made me the kitchen commander, the best place. You see, I wasn't hungry anymore. But everybody else went to work, so I was just looking after the kitchen. I wasn't cook, I was just only see that everything is in order.
You're in charge.
In charge, oh yes, you see. They promoted me. And then, suddenly, now what was it? I don't remember. Anyway, June 1941. You see, Sunday morning, they didn't send people to work, only they made big meeting. You see, there was that commander of the camp, and the political commissar was sitting, and everybody out, listen. So you see, then first time he mentioned that political commissar. He mentioned about misunderstanding between Germany and Soviet Russia, but he said it isn't true, it's just only rumors. But in case anything happened, we shall always fight our enemy on his territory. That I remember. And then you can see three planes just flying. And you see, and then he just machine gun the camp. And it was German Messerschmitts. You see, even those, they didn't know anything. I mean, the political commissar and the commander, they didn't know that war started. So you see, there was a couple men wounded in the camp. You see, that political commissar shouted, Spasais! And he just jumped under the table. I don't know whether he realized or not that table wouldn't give him protection.
What does spasais mean?
Spasais, that's just...
take cover?
Take cover, more or less. What actually happened? There was a road. Now, there was on one side of the road was our prisoners of war camp, and on the other side was the guard. So you see, those planes, they just turned around. Evidently, they had knowledge, or probably they realized that it is guard. So they dropped three bombs down there on that camp where the guards were. So it was out of the sack that war already, whether it was declared or not, but started. So there was all those tents, because all those camps, all the time I was in the tents. So on every tent there was a red flag. So I just came and said to that political commissar, I said, Tovarish Nachalnik, said, Kamrad Commandeer, command, those red flags, they shoot our camp because they have seen a red flags down here. Oh, he said, take it down. So it didn't take 10 seconds that all those red flags gone. And we, you know, we didn't know what, they didn't know what would happen, and we didn't know what would happen. And next morning, it was Monday, around about 11 o'clock, there was soup boiling in the kitchen, and they said, everybody out, just like that. At once, everybody out. So you can imagine, in that camp, there was about, I think, 1,200 men or something like that. Everybody out on the street, on the road, and start moving. So we were moving till nightfall. And then we came to place called Zborov. Now, there was...
Is this to the east of where
That's to the east. You see, they were pushing us to the east. Now, there was only one small, just like hut. And it was on the brick foundation, just so high. So somehow I was lucky I got place underneath. In case of rain, I will be dry. And early in the morning, a German plane came and started bombing just vicinity and shooting from machine gun. So you see, you are behind the barbed wire. And there were people killed in the camp, I mean, inside. So some decided to go over the wire to the other side. But you see, guard, when we came during the night, they just took position outside, put machine guns in the crossfire. You know what is crossfire?
Yes.
That's it, in the crossfire. And you see, those people, I mean, my colleagues who went over the wire just found themselves into the that crossfire, machine gun crossfire. And you see, German planes are bombing, shooting. There was Soviet mechanized column not far from there. They were just bombing them, and bombs are flying into that camp. Hell. You see, the worst, because you are closed. You can't go nowhere. Now, people who went over the wire, you see, got into the machine gun fire, and then the guards with the long bayonets just pushing on that wire. I have seen about half a dozen of them, you know, just pushed on with the bayonets.
Stabbed with the bayonets.
Stabbed with the bayonets. You know, so whoever could get inside, they got inside. They opened the gate and they said, off you go, out, you know. And convoy was along the road. What happened? Any civilian on the street was killed immediately. There were Russian soldiers. They were laying, I have seen, with evidently bomb hit him. And nobody took care of him. You see, without leg, he was just bleeding and begging for water.
With his legs blown off?
They just cut down here, just like that.
Cuts
and he was laying.
Calf.
And you see, nobody bothered about him at all, you know. And there was a station was burning. Everything, you know, that the motorized column was burning down there. And down here, there was no any order. You know, you just run on the street. If you don't run, you are killed. They shoot you. And they run us like that through that town to the other side. And then you're marching along. And believe me, that's where problems started. No water, no food. And you see, if anybody fell down, they didn't shoot. They just killed with the bayonet. And now we were and in the evening we came to another camp, because they had those camps along the route. Came to the other camp,